On Tuesday, we discuss, dissect, and delve into crimes of the past. It's time for True Crime Tuesday with Toby Dow.
Yeah, OJ Simpson's recently passed away, Toby Dow, and we thought, well, let's revisit the story, which, to be honest with you, I don't know a lot about, but Miss I was saying the one on Netflix is a great cracking show.
The People
vs.
OJ Simpson.
People vs. OJ, yeah.
Great doco. Cuba Gooding Jr., John Travolta. Yeah, great doco, that one.
Where do you want to start,
Toby? Guy from Friends as well, isn't it? He plays
not David Schwimmer.
David Schwimmer.
No, yeah. Does he?
Yeah.
Good.
David Schwimmer. Yeah.
It's a great. Yeah, I can't believe I'm watching. It was huge when it came out.
I can't wait. I'm going to get into it.
Yeah.
Where do you want to start?
Well, I suppose we'll start with what happened. So, for those that don't remember, it's nearly 30 years ago. I think it was 93. It happened June the third, 1993, and you know, Nicole Brown Simpson and a waiter from Metaluma restaurant, Ron Goldman, were found killed outside her apartment block. The police turned up. We'll get into the police in a moment.
Were they romantic?
The
Goldman.
Well, there's rumours they were, but there's, I don't know if there's much evidence of it. She was a bit of a floozy, I suppose you could say, after OJ. Her and OJ did have a background as well, of a bit of domestic violence. I think in 1988, he assaulted her, and then you know the next day he went and changed his prenup agreement because he felt so bad about it. But that was held against him, obviously, quite large in the trial. Then the police then went up to OJ's house where apparently they found a glove in the back area near a guest house in a garden area. And then they went into the house and he had already flown over to Chicago. He'd flown to Chicago that night at 11 o'clock. And the 11 o'clock timeline is the main thing in this case because the timelines from the prosecution and the defense are two completely different timelines. If you take the defense's view, he could not have done it. You take the narrative from the prosecution, then he's guilty, but just. So they say Nicole was murdered around 10:15. The defense had about 8 or 9 witnesses that say they heard all the noise after 10:30, 10:35. So it's impossible for him to murder two people.
And be on a plane.
And be on a plane, that's right, 11 o'clock. So it's impossible, because he lives 12 to 15 minutes away from her house. So it's impossible for him to commit those two crimes in the fashion that he did. Ron Goldman had fought for his life because he had bruises all over his legs and his hands. He'd been stabbed upwards of 25 times. Nicole's throat was cut to the point it was held on by 3 inches of skin. So the scene was just a bloodbath. Mm. Not trying to sound too gory for everyone, but that's how it was, legitimate. So whoever did it would have been covered in blood. They go to OJ's house. They find a glove. Mark Furman, this cop, who we'll delve into as well, he found the glove in the back section. And he also said he found spots of blood on the Bronco door, which is a vital piece of evidence, which they end up in the courtroom. The criminologist, Dennis Fung, for the prosecution, the LAPD, was on the stand. And they questioned him about the gun, but did you see the spots of blood? And he goes, no. And he showed Dennis Fung. He goes, but you can't see the blood spots with the door shut, right? You can't see them. So how could Mark Furman see them at night when they go to the house? Like, it's impossible, which means someone had to be in the car. So it leads to, when we talk about reasonable doubt as to why OJ got off, and there's a famous bit in the clip where this Dennis Fung was destroyed by Barry Sheck. I remember we spoke about Barry Sheck. First time I ever come on here, Barry Sheck was mentioned because he runs a thing called the Innocence Case, the Innocent Project, which they fight for people who have been put in jail, they believe have been wrongly convicted by prosecution. And Barry Sheck absolutely tore Dennis Fung to bits in there. And there's a famous bit that he says on the clip. I think we got it here.
And when you saw these series of tapes, Mr. Fung, you realized that you had been caught in a lie, didn't you?
No.
Mr. Fung, none of this ever happened in terms of putting that gray manila envelope in that plastic bag. Isn't that right?
That's incorrect.
Okay, so after this is what happened the whole way through the cross-examination of Dennis Fung. Normally, a cross-examination for someone like him would take a day. Barry Sheck kept him on the stand for 9 days and tore him a new one every day. So that's only part of it. He also, he ends up going on, you can see he's delaying his answers there because he's trying to think of what to say. Because he knows what's going to come. And they know, the defense knows that he's he's lying. And so they end up catching him out. He goes, what about that, Mr. Fung? And they show him the clip. He goes, okay, well, now my recollection is, yeah, he constantly, 369 times, I think, on the stand, he said, I can't recall when being cross-examined, but on proper examination by the prosecution, he talked about it just willingly because they obviously, they teach him, they coerce him, you know, before they go on the stand. So when people talk about reasonable doubt in this case and people think that OJ should have been found guilty, there's no way he should have been found guilty. No way in the world.
Which he wasn't, but he was civilly, wasn't he?
Civilly he was in the other case, but when, you know, they... In this case alone, the glove, like you talk about the DNA evidence, and which was the main factor in this case. DNA was only brand new in this case. Ooh. And the DNA in this case, that, you know, there was a spot, there's three main bits. There's a sock, a spot on the back gate, and the glove. Now, within the glove itself, none of OJ's DNA was found inside the glove. Now, if you've just committed two crimes to the magnitude of what OJ did, there would be your DNA all what inside that glove.
Yeah.
And then they had the contamination from the criminals who admitted that they didn't change gloves when they were testing the swabs, which transfers from one to another. So there was, it was so sloppy on the police part, but the police and the prosecution knew, well, the prosecution, I reckon, knew that the police had done some things because the sock had a wet transfer onto the third surface, which means there was the two detectives, I'll speak about this all day, but the two detectives, Van Adder and Tom Lang, they walked in and they said they found a sock on the ground, that had a blood spot. They were black socks. You can't see blood on a black sock. Impossible. Yeah. They said there was a spot of black, so they got it tested. Three different crime labs tests couldn't find blood. It wasn't until they sent it back to the LAPD, they said, yeah, we found a spot of blood. Now, leading up to this, they'd drawn blood out of OJ's, It's 8 millimeters of blood, the vials take. Now, in those vials is EDTA, which is a coagulant, anticoagulant, stops the blood from turning off. And then all the blood of OJ's EDTA in it that they found.
Right.
Now, when they handed the blood back in, Van Adder and Tom Lang had held on to that overnight. They didn't hand in the blood the next day, and they'd gone between the two crime scenes. So instead of handing it straight into evidence, they'd actually held on to blood. When they handed it back, there was only 6.5 milliliters of blood in it. So their question was, well, where'd the other 1.5 go? Once the prosecution knew this, they went and got a videotape confession of the nurse that took the blood and goes, maybe I was wrong, maybe I only took 6.5 and I wrote it wrong. Which is like, everything was always after the fact for the prosecution.
So it was sloppy as.
It was sloppy as, and there's no other way. But
Got to run, Toes, but really quickly, what was the said motive around it?
For OJ?
Why
you think she got murdered?
No, yes.
Okay, I believe that there was a guy called Tom Lang, never made it to the stand. The prosecution wouldn't put on. He lived up the road. He walked his dog that night and he got down to the corner of Bundy where she lived. He saw a lady, he didn't know Nicole at the time, blonde-haired lady in a black dress, arguing with these two South American, Latin guys. One was standing behind her at the entrance to her gate. The other guy was in a massive big pickup truck out the front. There was two cars parked behind and he could see that there was something really wrong with this. So he kept everything in his mind, visual, what he saw. And he went back and he told his wife. He went and gave a police report. So he was the last man to see her alive. This was at 10 o'clock at night. Mm. But the prosecution never called him because it went against the narrative.
Got a break. Well done, true crime, Toby Dow. And geez, he's 19 years. I want the listeners, if there's any true crime stories you want Tobes to come in and share with us, we'll get you to the case for that. Toby Dow, he's going to choke. And we want another crime scene happening here. Thanks, Tobes. We've got to go to a break.